We'll begin on Daf Yud Gimel Amud Aleph down at the bottom. We got it. Tanu Rabbanon. So now, as we began discussing the other day, the mitzvah of reciting Kriya Shema is outlined in the third and fourth psukim of the parsha of Kriya Shema, which on our sheet is V'hayu Advarim. On our sheet, it's number 3 and 4. V'hayu Advarim Ve'ila Hashem Nechim Yitzavakla Yoyim Alev Avecha V'shinantam Levanecha V'dibatam V'shiftecha V'meisecha, etc. And these words, number 3, and these words which I am commanding you today shall be on your heart, and you shall teach them to your children. Okay, that's not really our subject now, but, and you shall speak in them. What's this? This is the mitzvah of Kriya Shema. This is the source of the mitzvah of Kriya Shema. When you sit in your home, when you travel on the way, when you lie down, and when you get up, we remember those are very key words. These psukim are outlining the mitzvah of Kriya Shema. I'm sorry? Well, it could be things, meaning these things should be on your heart. It would be the same thing. Shema, meaning Sukkim 1 and 2. No, before that is a different parsha. Meaning what precedes? Not a different parsha as in Vaischanan. It's all parshas Vaischanan, but I mean as in sections in the Torah. Like beforehand is a different, it's not connected. The parsha, when I say parsha, I mean that section of the Torah. Again, let's just make this clear. In general, we're throwing around the word parsha a lot here. Parsha, as defined by halacha in general, means, you look in the Chumash, you know, you see every so often the big pei or the big samach. That is what divides sections in the Torah. No, what precedes it is those psukim of Shema and Ve'ahavta. It says, got pasuk 1 and 2 that we have here. Beforehand is a completely different parsha that's unrelated. Then you have Shema, hear Yisrael, Hashem is your God, Hashem is one. Ve'ahavta, you shall love Hashem, etc. And then, after these two psukim, which are the fundamental psukim of Shema, right, after telling you, hear Yisrael, and you shall love Hashem, dot, Torah says, now you heard what I just told you? These words shall be on your heart, right? I'm sorry? Yeah, and probably to 3 also. Right, okay. So now, if we take Psukim 3 and 4, we will see that there seem to be 2 components of the Mishnah, of the mitzvah. The mitzvah is number 1, they should be on your heart, which means you have to be thinking about these things. And number 2, which we see in pasuk number 4, you should speak in them. You got to articulate it. This is the mitzvah of Kriya Shema. You have to articulate it and think of it at the same time, which means that it's not enough to just articulate. Part of the mitzvah is to think about what you're saying. You got to focus on what you're saying. So, this is where we come with the din that kavana is an essential part of fulfillment of the mitzvah of Kriya Shema, not like other areas where you really should, etc. Here, it's essential to the mitzvah. Without kavana, you have not fulfilled the mitzvah. What's that? That's the question. Okay, so now we're going to start discussing exactly what that applies to. So, Tanu Rabbanon, it says in the Braisa, Ve'ahayu, when it says, and they shall be, meaning these words shall be, she'lo yikro lemafreya. This is teaching us that you shouldn't read it backwards. That we already discussed. As far as we're concerned, that's old news right now. But now we're going to continue expounding this puzzle. It says, hadvarim, sorry? We explained that the Mishnah means the order of the parshas, but the order of the psukim and the words within the parsha has to be in order. Hadvarim alivavecho. When the pasuk continues, it says these words, etc. In passage 3, right on our sheet, these words shall be on your heart. That implies that you have to think of what you're saying while you're saying it. You have to have kavana. Now, does this mean that just this pasuk needs kavana? Or maybe the whole section needs kavana? All of El Havta. Talmud Loimar, therefore the pasuk stresses, Ha'ele, these words shall be on your heart. Not the whole parsha. Once you've gotten past these words, you don't need to ad kan tzricha kavana. So only up until here. These words need to be on your heart. Meaning, everything up until this point. Mikan ve'elach ein tzricha kavana. But the subsequent psukim, v'shinantam levanecha, you shall teach unto your children, right? You should tie them as teitofos to your arm and head. All that does not require kavana. These words need kavana, meaning up until this point needs kavana. Shema and ve'ahavta. Okay. Divrei Rabbi Eliezer. That's the opinion of Rabbi Eliezer. So no, you don't need kavana for the whole parsha, meaning for all of ve'ahavta. You just need until the words alev avecha, until that pasuk. Omar le Rabbi Akiva. So Rabbi Akiva says, your understanding that the pasuk is limiting kavana until the words alev avecha. Harayu oimer, but the pasuk also says asher nechim etzavecha hayoyim alev avecha. You skipped a couple of words when you cited the pasuk. The pasuk says, let's go back to verse number 3, and these words which I am commanding you today shall be on your heart. It doesn't just say and these words shall be on your heart. It says these words that I'm commanding you today, which implies everything we're going to be discussing today, meaning in this section here, should be on your heart, which means the whole parsha, the whole discussion has to be on your heart. So mikana talamed, from here we derive shekola parsha kula tzricha kavana. The whole parsha requires intent, meaning from ve'ahavta until vish'arecha. Right? You also need kavana for vishinantam levanecha, etc. Ukshatam lo'oysal yodecha, v'ayulu toitopis beninecha, ukshatam al mizuzois beisecho vish'arecha. We didn't go that far in our translation, because we're not dealing with those psukim. But until the end of ve'ahavta, the full parsha requires full intent. Okay. So, this is a fundamental question. Do we just need kavana in the pasuk of Shema and the pasuk of Ve'ahavta? Or do you need kavana all the way until the end of Ve'ahavta? Bish'arecha. Okay. So, Omar Rabbi Bar Bar Chana. Rabbi Bar Bar Chana says, Omar Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan says, Halacha k'Rabbi Akiva. The halacha follows Rabbi Akiva, the more stringent opinion. Yes, you need kavana for the full parsha of Ve'ahavta. Okay. What's that? The Amoraim did that regularly, meaning whenever there were machloikis tanaim that were left unresolved, it was up to the greater Amoraim. They had their darkei hapsaka, the rules of how to paskin. In this case, the rule would be that, in general, machlokes between Rabbi Akiva and most other Tanoim, the halacha follows Rabbi Akiva. The Tanoim are before the Amoraim, but when the disputes of the Tanoim were left open-ended, the Amoraim came and ruled conclusively what we do. Okay. I just want to make a comment here, meaning it's not just a question of Zeras HaKasuv, should we choose these psukim or the whole thing. The two first psukim are really the fundamental psukim of the parsha. Superficially, the rest of the parsha is technical. Meaning these two psukim are mamish laying down the fundamentals of being Jewish, right? Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad, and you shall love Hashem with all your heart, all your soul, and all your might. So it's those psukim, that's really the fundamental part that needs kavanah. The rest of the psukim are already technical. You have to recite it at this time, you have to hang it on the door, you have to tie it to your arm, etc. So that we can understand the logic behind Rabbi Eliezer's drasha, that only the first two psukim require that kavanah. That's really the main thing. But yet Rabbi Akiva says, well, what should we do? The pasuk does imply that everything I'm commanding you today, which means the whole parsha, we're right at the top of your Gimel Amud Beis, the whole parsha. So I'll just stick it in parentheses that let's appreciate the continuation of the parsha. Again, it sounds technical, right? Yeah, you shall love Hashem, that's the beautiful part. After that, well, you should speak of it twice a day, when you lie down, when you get up, in all these different circumstances. You should tie it to your arm and head, you should tie it to the doorpost, the mezuzah, it's feeling technical. Well, let's understand, that's not technical either. The truth is that those psukim are very, very significant besides just the technical mitzvahs they include. These psukim are showing us exactly what level of relationship Hashem wants to have with us. Meaning, Hashem is saying, yes, you have to love me. But now Hashem is adding, look what kind of relationship I want to have with you. I think I've given this mashal in the past. If anybody's been, when you visit the home of a follower of a certain Rebbe, right, or a Rav, if it's a real diehard, often, come into somebody's home, you'll see a picture of the Rabbanim he admires. But when a person, let's say, is a follower of a specific Rebbe or something like that, can sometimes come into someone's home and there are pictures plastered all over the place. He's got them hanging from the mirror in his car, and wherever you look on the wall, you got pictures of the Rebbe, pictures of the Rebbe, pictures of the Rebbe on the fridge, on the walls, in the kids' bedrooms, right? Why? Because they glorify in their relationship with him, and they want to have it all over the place. They want it. Hashem is saying, Lahavdil, right? We shouldn't have to draw on the truth as we do. It's a good way of relating to things by drawing on human relations. Hashem is saying, I want to have a relationship with you that manifests everywhere, right? You walk through the door, every time you walk through the door, Hashem, even on your arm and head, all over, carrying around with you throughout the day, Hashem, 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 this is the type of relationship I want with you. So, even the end of the parsha also is not so technical. But whatever it is, here we have this machlokes, and Rabbi Yochanan is ruling like the more stringent opinion, that the entire parsha of Ahavta requires kavanah. Now, Ike demasnila aha. Some had a version of this statement that when Rabbi Yochanan ruled like Rabbi Akiva, it was said in a different context. The Tanya, meaning in the Braisa that we just saw, Rabbi Akiva is the more stringent opinion. Right? It's not enough to have kavanah in the first two psukim; you have to have kavanah for all of El Havta. Rabbi Akiva appears in another context as well. The Tanya says in the Braisa, HaKoyre Shema, when you're reciting Shema, Sorich Sheyachavin Esliboy. When you're saying Shema, you have to have Kavanah. Period. Meaning for the whole thing. Shema, V'ahavta, V'ahaya, and V'ayomer. All three parshas. Rabbi Acha Mishum Rabbi Yehuda Aymer. Rabbi Acha says in the name of Rabbi Yehuda, you don't need for all three parshas. Kivan Shekivan Liboy Beperek Rishon. Once you had kavanah in that first parsha, in ve'ahavta, shema ve'ahavta, shuveinai tzarich. That's enough. Ah, so here we're seeing a third opinion, right? Before we saw the shema ve'ahavta, or all of ve'ahavta, and now we're seeing another opinion, the whole thing. Rabbi Yehuda is saying in the name of Rabbi Acha, no, sorry, the other way around. Rabbi Acha in the name of Rabbi Yehuda, no, ve'ahavta is enough. Omar Abba Baba Chana, Omar Rabbi Yechanan. Rabbi Baba Chana says in the name of Rabbi Yechanan, Halacha ki Rabbi Acha she'omar at Mishum Rabbi Yehuda. The Halacha follows Rabbi Acha in the name of Rabbi Yehuda, that Kavana in the first Parsha Shema and Ve'ahavta suffices. So let's just note that it's really the same ruling as before. The Kavana is required for all of the first Parsha. Just that. Whereas in the previous context it was the more stringent of the two opinions, here it's the more lenient of the two opinions, but it's the same ruling. Meaning, the bottom line is that we have three opinions. Either you need kavanah for the psukim of Shema and Ve'ahavta, for all of the Avta or for the entire Shema, all three Parshias. And Rabbi Yochanan is saying we go with the middle opinion, Ve'ahavta. So we'll see a fourth opinion on the matter. We might not get to it today. But actually, none of these three are accepted as the halacha. Rabbi Yochanan's ruling notwithstanding, the halacha follows a fourth opinion, which we'll introduce later. What's the makar for all three? Well, the makar for the second we'll see soon. What the makar for the third is, I don't know. Oh yeah? Ah, okay. That will answer the question. He said that they cite at the bottom that the intent here, when they say all of it, it really means only the first two. If so, we'll see that that is substantiated. We'll see. What's that? Oh, so what is the halacha? He wants to know, how do I say Shema tomorrow? So, the halacha is the first pasuk. Just Shema. More lenient than what we've seen up till now. That's the opinion of Rav Meir coming up later. I gave it away. I don't have a shiur for Sunday. Okay. Fine. Now, Tanya Eid. Now I have another brisa. Up till now, we were discussing basically, just the first parsha. Now we're going to move on to start discussing the second parsha too, Vehaya, and what different halachas there might be between the two. We have to remember again that Shema and Ve'ahavta is one parsha with its own command. Vehaya and Shemaya is in a different parsha, meaning in the full sense of the word. It's a parsha's Ekev. It's got its own command to be recited. We put the two together. But really, there are two separate commands. Recite Shema and Ve'ahavta. There's another command. Recite Ve'ahaya. Now, depending on how each command is expressed, there might be different parameters. Meaning, what might be required for one might not be required for the other. We have to analyze each parsha in itself and see what's required for that parsha. Meaning, like we've already started seeing, you might require kavanah for one, but not for the other. The question is, what did Torah say in the other parsha? So let's see. That's what we've been saying up till now. The bottom line halacha. You're right, but that's a secret. We're still before that. Okay. Now, Tanya Ida, we have another brisa. It says as follows. Vahayu says, these words shall be shelo yikola maprea. Implying, don't read it backwards. Okay, that is mamish old news by now. Al levavecha. It says, they should be on your heart, once again, which implies that you need kavana. Rabbi Zutra Oimer. So Rabbi Zutra says, here he's already not talking within the first parsha. He is contrasting the first parsha to the second. He is contrasting Shema Ve'ahavta to Vehaya and Shemaya. So he says, it says Aleph Avecha in Ve'ahavta. And therefore, Ad Kan Mitzvahs Kavana. For Shema Ve'ahavta, you need Kavana. Mikan Ve'elach, but Vehaya and Shemaya is already a different requirement. No requirement for kavana. It doesn't say alev avecha sham. The requirement is mitzvah kriya. There the mitzvah is to read it, to articulate it. So it's two different chiyuvim. The ahavta says alev avecha. The Torah requires you to think about it. Oh, good question. That's a problem. We're going to push it under the rug for now. Okay? But the Ahavta says Alev Avecha, so it requires Kavana. Do you have to articulate it? It says Alev Avecha. So Kavana is required for the Ahavta. But Vayam Shemaya requires articulation, not necessarily with Kavana. Two separate Chiyuvim. How we come up with that? So George already hinted to that. But basically it's because the Ahavta says Alev Avecha, Kavana. Vayam Shemaya says Lidaber Bam, to speak in them. So Vayam Shemaya requires articulation, but after requires Kavana. Good. And as George pointed out, we're going to leave ourselves meanwhile in ignorant bliss and accept that at face value. So Rabbi Yeshia Aymer, he says exactly the other way around. Ad kan mitzvahs kriya. No, the after requires articulation, because it says, well, we'll see soon. V'dibartoba, you should speak in them. Nothing about kavana, right? Mikan ve'elach, but the next parsha, v'haya, mitzvahs kavana. There the requirement is to have kavana, because it says alevavchem. So he's reversing it. So now the Gemara is going to say, what's going on here? Right? That's basically what's going on, right? Rav Zutra says, the Hafta says, Alav Avechos or Kavana. Goyen Shemaya says, Ladabebam. So, speak it out. Rav Yeshia comes and says, oh, I have a different version of Shema. The Hafta says, Vedibatabam. You should speak in it. Vayim Shemaya says, Alav Avchem. So it's the other way around. Articulation for the Hafta, Kavana for Vayim Shemaya. Just think about it. So the Gemara says, what's going on here? They both have the same psukim, right? Maishna mikan ve'elach mitzvahs kriya. We're going to start with Rav Zutra, the first opinion. He said, kavana for ve'ahavta, and articulation for v'haya. Now, how come v'hayam shemaya requires articulation? Diksiv ledaberba. Because it says to speak in them. If you want to actually see it inside, I haven't been following on the sheet, but you have the relevant psukim on the sheet. Hachanami. So also in Ve'ahavta, Ksiv V'dibartabam, it says that you shall speak in them. So how can you cut articulation out from Ve'ahavta? Ve'ahavta, yes, it says Alevavcha, but it also says to speak in them. So the Gemara says, you know what, you're right. Hachika Ama, he didn't mean to say that Ve'ahavta requires only intent. Ad kan mitzvahs kavana vikriya. Ve'ahavta says both. Alevavcha and v'dibartabam. So therefore, you require intent and articulation. Mikan ve'elach, but vayam shamaya is kriya b'loy kavana. There it says ledaberbam. You should speak in them. And therefore, we only require articulation, no intent. So the Gemara says, 1 minute, that still doesn't add up, right? Because as we pointed out, really, both parshiyos contain both. So let's see. Umayshna ad kan mitzvahs kavana v'kriya. How come he's saying that ve'ahavta requires both? Intent and articulation. Diksiv alev avecha v'dibartabam. Because he got both verses there. It says, alev avecha, should be on your heart, and you should speak in them. Hasam nami, also in Vayam Shemaya, haksiv al levavchem ledaberbam. It also says both things. It says it should be on your heart and to speak in them. If you want to see it on the sheet, we have the two relevant psukim. This is how it appears at the end of Vayam Shemaya, right? V'samtem esvayel al levavchem val nafshechem. You shall place these words of mine on your hearts, etc. Which implies you got to be thinking about it there too. And then the next pasuk says, "Velimatem oisem es b'neichem ledaber bam." You shall teach them to your children to speak in them. So also in Vayam Shemaya, you have not only articulation but intent as well. So the Gemara says, "No, Vayam Shemaya has only articulation." When it says in Vayam Shemaya, "You shall place it on your heart," it does not mean intent. It means something else. When it says in Vayam Shemaya, you shall place him on your heart, it means what Rabbi Yitzchak taught. The Omar, he said, when it says, you shall place these words of mine on your heart, it means, it's not telling you to think about it. It's telling you where you should put the tefillin. Right? That pasuk tells you that you have to tie these words to your arm, meaning you have to put tefillin on. So when it says you should put it on your heart, it means where do you put the tefillin? On your heart. You have it on the biceps, which is right near the heart. That's all the pasuk is saying. So don't misunderstand it to mean that it's requiring kavanah. It's a different type of heart than ve'ahavta. When it says ve'ahavta, these things shall be on your heart, that means that you have to have intent. When it says ve'ahavta shamaya, it should be on your heart, it's not requiring intent, it's just telling you where to put the tefillin. So therefore, we've clarified Rabbi Zutra's position. Ve'ahavta requires both kavanah and articulation. Vayam Shamaya requires only articulation. When it says place it on your heart, it means put the tefillin near your heart. So that is Rabbi Zutra's opinion. Now we're going to go on to analyze Rabbi Yeshia's opinion. What had Rabbi Yeshia said? Ve'ahavta requires articulation. Vayam Shamaya requires intent. So the other way around. He reversed it, right? So now we're going to go and analyze his opinion until we can finally let the dust settle and understand what this machlekes exactly is. Omar Ma, we had said earlier, Rabbi Yoshia Oimer, Ad Kan Mitzvah Kriya, until here, meaning the first parsha, Shman Ve'ahavta, requires articulation. Mikan Ve'elach Mitzvah Kavana. Whereas Vayam Shomaya requires intent. So the Gemara asks here, as it did on Rabbi Zutra, he also must face the fact that both elements are stated in both parshas. So, Maishna Mikan Ve'elach Mitzvah Kavana. How come you're saying that specifically in Vayam Shomaya, there we require intent? Diksiv Alevavchem. Because it says that it should be on your heart, then he does construe this to mean intent. He doesn't apply this to tefillin. He does construe this to mean intent. So that's why Vahaya requires intent. When Ve'ahavta also it says that you these things shall be on your heart. So how come he only says that Vayam Shemaya requires intent, not Ve'ahavta? So the Gemara answers, Hachiko Amar. What he meant to say was as follows. You're right, Ve'ahavta contains both elements, and therefore, Ad Kan Mitzvah Kriya V'Kavana. Ve'ahavta requires articulation and intent. As Rabbi Zutra said, Mikan Ve'elach Kavana V'Loy Kriya. When he stressed that Ve'ahaya requires Kavana, he only meant to say that Ve'ahaya requires only Kavana. Whereas Ve'ahavta requires also articulation. So Ve'ahavta requires both. So if so, what emerges is that everybody agrees that Ve'ahavta requires both. Rabbi Zutra and Rabbi Yoshia both agree that Ve'ahavta requires articulation and intent. The Machlokes is only about Vayam Shamaya. Rabbi Zutra said it requires only articulation. And Rabbi Yoshia says it requires only intent, not articulation. So now the Gemara asks, okay, we saw Rabbi Zutra got rid of the words Alevavchem, he said it's so much tefillin. But how does Rabbi Yoshia get rid of the words Lidaber Bom, you shall speak in them? How does he get to his conclusion that you only require intent? Maishna ad kan mitzvah kriya v'kavana. How come the Ahavta requires articulation and intent? Diksiv Alevavchem v'dibarta bom. Because it says it should be on your heart, alevavcha, and it also says, and you shall speak in them. So you need both. Hasamnami, in Vayam Shamaya as well. Haksiv alevavcha v'daber l'daberbam. It says, A, the santam is vay ela alevavcha, like we see in on the bottom on the sheet. In number one, it should be, look on the bottom. It should be on your, you should place these things on your heart. And then the next pasuk says, you should teach them to your children and speak in them. So here also, we have both elements. Why does he disregard the articulation part? The Gemara answers, he maintains that when it says, you shall teach them to your children to speak in them, it's not referring to the mitzvah of reciting the parasha of Kriya Shema. It's a general command. Taira, in general, you should teach them to your children to speak in them. It's not saying that you have to speak Kriya Shema. Teach your children to speak Divrei Taira. And therefore, as far as Kriya Shema goes, it only says you should place it on your heart. So there's a chiyuv to have intent. articulation, according to Rabbi Yoshia, is not mentioned about Kriyat Shema, and therefore no articulation is required for Kriyat Shema. You just have to think it. According to Rabbi Yoshia, that's what they did. They said Be'ahavta, and then they closed their eyes and they thought Be'ayim Shemaya, and that was that. Whereas according to Rabbi Zutra, they only said Be'ayim Shemaya without thinking. You didn't have to think. It wasn't essential. Now, what the Torah means to say with this verse, and you shall teach them to your children to speak in them, Agmiru Banaychu Torah. Torah is telling us, Hashem is telling us, teach your children Torah, Ke'eichi Diligasuba, so that they should become fluent in it. That's what the pasuk means. You should teach them to your children to speak in them. What does it mean, teach them to your children to speak in them? Teach it to them to the extent that they become fluent in it and they converse in it automatically. So the bottom line here is, after we let the dust settle, that all agree that Be'ahavta requires both articulation and intent, because it says Alevavcha, and it also says Vidibatoba. We have a machlekes about Behaya. As Rabbi Zutra says, it requires only articulation. Rabbi Yoshia says it requires only intent. Okay. I don't think I'm being mechadish much if I break it to you that we don't follow Rabbi Yoshia's opinion, and therefore you do have to articulate Bahaya and Shemaya. Okay. I just want to... The Gemara kind of brought this in parentheses, but the Gemara's last response, we should just understand the significance of this. That when the Torah says, that means, you shall teach them to your children to speak in them. The Torah is outlining how teaching Torah should work. This is how it was in earlier times. Teach it to them to the extent, what does it mean, teach them to, that doesn't just say teach them Torah so they should know Torah. Teach it to them to speak in the meaning. This should become something, a subject of conversation for them. It's like David HaMelech said, Torah, David HaMelech says, Ma'abdi Torah, Secha kol yoyim hi Sicha si. I love your Torah. It's what I schmooze about all day long. Sicha as opposed to Dibur. Dibur denotes speech, meaning purposeful speech. Sicha denotes what we call schmoozing. Talking for the fun of it. Right? When you're discussing business, that's Dibur. When you're discussing news, that's sicha, right? You're schmoozing. So the Torah is saying, David HaMelech says, I love your Torah so much that that's what I schmooze about. Meaning, wasn't sitting down, you know, now he has to learn. Now he's going to learn. He's going to do a mitzvah now. He's going to learn. Right? That was what he schmoozed about. That was what he enjoyed. When he met a friend, he said, you know what I just, learned? You know what I just understood? You know, it was a subject of schmoozing. That was what was fun to schmooze about. The Torah is saying, you should teach it to your children to schmooze in it. Meaning, don't just teach them Torah. You got subjects. It makes me nuts when I hear more in the girls' schools than in the boys' schools how, you see on the schedule there's Torah, you know, 9 to 9.45 is Torah, 9.45 to 10.30 is math, 10.30 to 11.15 is Dikduk, 11.15 till 12 is Navi, right? It's a subject. It's a subject to study. Got it in the box, right? Now I'm in class. Now I'm doing Torah, right? No. The point is to try to reach a situation where that really becomes your pursuit, your pastime, your hobby. Gretz. Remember good old Gretz? That old Gretz? Wasn't a very big religion lover. But he couldn't help. What's that? No, he is? Gretz was a historian from one of the first Bible critics. A Jew, of course, right? Most prominent Bible critics are Jews. He started out as a Talmud of Reb Shimshon Raphael Hirsch. He lived in his home. He read the 19 letters and he was very inspired, and he made a point of tracking down the author, and he told him, I just want to learn from you. Rav Hirsch invited him to his home. He lived in Rav Hirsch's home for a while. But, apparently, it didn't have the desired effect. And, one thing led to the other. He left his home after a while, fine, but their relationship soured over time. Among the things that happened was that he showed up with his newlywed wife. Right after his wedding, he showed up with his newlywed wife in Rav Hirsch's house to visit. And his wife was there without a head covering, without her hair covered. So Rav Hirsch dropped any diplomacy and gave it to both of them over their head. And that was basically the last direct communication. But whatever it is, he went on to become, he authored what became at that time one of the biggest works on Jewish history. In which basically there he shows how Chazal's authority is not real and this and that. It's basically a work about Bikurasis. But yet he can't help, okay, this is all in parentheses, a little bit of historic background. But even Gretz, when he records the Jewish history from the time in Prague, I think it was. Prague, a few hundred years earlier, in the time of the Ramah, either Prague or Krakow, I forgot which one, he says that the situation of the Jewish people was such that the Torah, remember, that was before the first irreligious Jew, that was before all the deterioration started setting in. He said, Torah boiled within the houses of study, he writes this, and spilled out into the streets. And when he walked through the Jewish quarter in Prague, you heard children in the streets battling Torah. That's how he describes how things were then. And Prague is already towards the end of the line of Jewish tradition. How did things look back in the time of Chazal? That's what I mean. That really, the point is, you don't teach Torah as a subject. Torah is not a subject. Torah is something to live and breathe. You teach kids to schmooze in it. That you can't do by forcing it and ramming it down their throats. You gotta make it really fun for them in order to do that. Okay. We'll move on. Tanu Rabbanan. We have a braisa that says, and here we're getting to the bottom line halacha. Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. Does that sound familiar? Ad kan tzricha kavanas halev. It's this, up until this point, that requires kavana. Divrei Rabbi Meir. That's the opinion of Rabbi Meir. That's all. The first pasuk. Omar Rava. Now Rava says, halacha ki Rabbi Meir. The halacha follows Rabbi Meir. And that is indeed the bottom line halacha. Kavana is required as an essential part of Shema, only for the first pasuk. So it is important to note, let's just note, that again, this does not mean that Kavana is encouraged. Kavana is always encouraged. Right? We're always strongly encouraged to have Kavana when we daven. What it means here is that you're not yoitz in the mitzvah of Kriya Shema without having Kavana in the first pasuk. And it's important to understand why. Because without Kavana you didn't do anything. Again, let's remember, the mitzvah of Kriya Shema is not to say it. We've already seen how Chazal defined the mitzvah of Kriya Shema. The mitzvah of Kriya Shema is accepting Hashem as King. If you read a text without thinking anything, have you done that? Accepting Hashem as King is not reading, right? It's not talking. It's a conscious acceptance. And therefore, if you read that first pasuk of Shema with a blank mind, you haven't done anything. You haven't done the mitzvah. It's not the mitzvah. The essence of the mitzvah is that. You have to realize that when I'm sitting down to say Shema, I am about to commit myself. And that's why it's essential here. And therefore, yes, if a person realizes, the place can say, a person realizes that he did not have intent in the first pasuk of Kriya Shema, you have to go back. You have to go back and you got to say it again. Here, though, okay, this is a discussion. We'll continue it next time. But here are just a couple of technical points. Let's say a person realizes, he said Shema, you know, I didn't have Kavana. You got to go back. Let's just note that this conflicts with another halacha. There's an halacha that says, we'll learn that later, you're not allowed to recite Shema twice consecutively. The pasuk of Shema, that first pasuk. Why? Because Shema is declaring the oneness of Hashem. When you say one time after the other, you say, well, there's that one and there's that one. Right? Chas v'shalom, it can have a sound like there are two. So therefore, it's considered actually a severe iser to say the pasuk of Shema twice consecutively. So, therefore, if you realize after saying the first pasuk of Shema that you missed the kavana, So you either repeat it in a whisper, the point is not to say it loud, you either repeat it in a whisper, or you wait a moment or two, then you can repeat it. But this is only an issue if it's right after you said just that pasuk. If you already finished the Ahavta, then there's no problem in going back and saying Shema again. One other point.
Are we talking about some milim or coming up or coming up almost the Shemaim as the intent?
Okay. Rabbi Yitzchak is asking a learned question. We say that you require kavan. You know, first I just want to make one or two more technical points. Another point to realize is, so let's say you said Shema and Ahavta, finished Ahavta, now you realize that you didn't have intent in Shema. It's not enough to just say Shema. You have to say Shema through the end of Ahavta, because let's remember this is connected to the halacha we saw before. The Shema that you said was nothing, right? So you really started from the Ahavta. If afterwards you say Shema, you're saying the parsha in the wrong order. So therefore, if you missed the Kavan in Shema, you have to say Shema again with all of the Ahavta. However, just one minute, if you said all of Shema, Shema, Vayim, Shemaya, Vayomer, and then you realize that you didn't have Kavana, so you don't have to say the whole thing again. You have to say Shema with the Ahavta again. Shema with the Ahavta is that parsha. Each parsha in and of itself has to be said in the right order. But, as you've pointed out, if you say the full parshias in the wrong order, that's okay. So therefore, you said Shema v'hoya v'yomer, and then you realize, hey, I missed kavana. Say Shema with v'ahavta again, and you're okay. You rearrange the order of the parshias. So that's okay. You said v'hoya v'yomer Shema. That's okay. But the evidence. What were you going to ask? What's with Baruch Shem Kavod Malchus Olam Vayed? There are conflicting implications in the Mishnah Berurah. Mishnah Berurah in one place says that yes, Baruch Shem Kvod Malchus Olam Vayed also is essential. You have to have Kavanah there too.
Is that a break in between? In other words, one said Shema Yisrael Shem Yisrael Shem Yisrael Kavanah, and he says Baruch Shem Kvod Malchus Olam Vayed, and he goes again.
Is that enough to say Shema? I think that it depends on passage of time more than just saying. I mean, you have to give it a moment or two. Okay, now we have to point out a point that Rabbi Yitzchak just raised, and that is, whenever we talk about Kavana, this is in general very important to realize, whenever we talk about Kavana, intent, Tefillah, Shema, etc., there are always two elements of intent. There's intent of the concept, of the theme, and then there's the words that you're saying. So, let's know, like for example, a person might sometimes be so caught up in what does this word mean, what does this word mean, what does this word mean, that at the end of the day, basically what he's done is, he's gone through a bunch of words, thinking of what they mean, but what have you just said, right? But what was the point? Oh, well, let me think about it again, what did I just say? So, you have to know what you're saying. For example, Shema, okay, Shema, there are six words there. You gotta know what Shema means, you have to know what Yisrael means, you have to know what Hashem means, Elokeinu, Hashem, well you already know it from the first time, and Echad. Right, but besides that, you gotta know what's the message of this pasuk. The message of this pasuk is that you are declaring Hashem's oneness and accepting His rulership. You have to be aware, that's what I'm coming to say. And you have to know how you're expressing that in each word. It's like that with all the brachas of Shemana Esrei also, right? A person learns, the Perush Hamilus, what this word means, what this word means. But, 1 minute, before you start the bracha of Rishpa'enu, think for a minute. What I'm about to do is ask for help. I'm going to articulate it in the following manner. But know what you're doing. So that's also very important to note in Shema. Take both these things into account. What are you doing? I am now sitting down to say, Hashem, I accept you as my king. I acknowledge you as one and I accept you as my king. Also, note what each of the words means. Note how you're expressing that. Now, that deserves discussion. Bezras Hashem. I just want to finish off with one last point, and that is to understand that on the one hand, we say that Shema, the essence of Shema is Kabbalas Ol Malchus Shamayim, accepting Hashem as King. While actually, the words of Shema seem to be something else, which is actually a mitzvah. Declaring Hashem as one. Acknowledging that Hashem is one. That's when you read it, that's what Shema said. Don't say anything about accepting Him as King. And that's a mitzvah. To internalize Hashem's oneness. It's a mitzvah in and of itself. Where did the two come together? So, the Maharal explains that really the two mitzvahs are one and the same. When you really understand what we mean when we say that Hashem is one. So he says, first of all, in general, What is a king? What does a king do? A king, in a certain sense, right? Okay, obviously, the first thing we think about a king is a ruler, etc., etc. But when we talk about a king, really, what's the point of a king? In ancient times, they adored their kings, right? The king wasn't the tyrant. By the way, Lashon Kodesh differentiates between the word melech and moishel. Moishel is a ruler. Person who rules. He rules whether you like it or not. This is a person who took the government by force, whether they like it or not, he's the ruler. King denotes a person who was accepted by the nation as their king. The nation want his rule. That's a king. Now, what actually does a king do? A king is a unifying factor. He turns this country from a bunch of disjointed people and functions to one unified entity called a country, which has a lot of interaction. It turns into one system once there's a king. That's what a government really does, right? It turns it into one system. It's not that, well, you got a guy selling shoes there, and you got a guy selling vegetables there, and there's this, and there's this, and a bunch of individuals leading their lives. When you have a king, when you have a government, it transforms the whole thing into one interactive system. The king really is a unifying factor. That's what a king is. Now, when we talk about Hashem's oneness, basically what we're saying is that really, the world at first glance seems to be, what is the world? The world's got a lot of things to it, right? It's got a lot of elements to it. But we're coming and saying, Hashem is one, which really means that everything, Hashem is the king of the world, and therefore, we understand that the world is really just a system of Hashem's function, Hashem's purpose in this world. All of it is one interactive system. It's not a bunch of separate things and separate people. It's one interactive system all working together to fulfill Hashem's purpose. Now, when you declare that, if you're saying that, unlike a king, where at the end of the day, yes, he's a unifying factor, but I got my own life, and he's not unifying the ants. When you're saying that Hashem is one, what you're saying is, Hashem unifies everything in his world into that one joint entity of Hashem's purpose. Which means that you are acknowledging that every last detail in the world is there for Hashem's purpose. Now this has a lot of implications on you, because by saying that, you're actually acknowledging that I'm committed to seeing in everything about the world godliness and a means of furthering Hashem's will. That's a longer discussion, but that's how it comes together in a general way. And okay, we'll see where the Gemara is going to take this, and some more on this business Hashem next time.